couple of summers ago, I accompanied my granddaughter to a water slide park. You would think at this ripe old age, I would know better. But you're never too old to let your inner child come out. It was a warm day and the park was fairly crowded, which meant lots of long lines waiting to take our turn. My strategy in circumstances like that would be to maximize our time in the water by looking for the short lines. Maya, however, was determined to do every single ride in the park, including the tallest ones. Not surprisingly, those were also the most popular ones, which meant lots and lots and lots of time standing in line, inching our way step by step up the staircase to the top of the ride. Wait times of 15 minutes or more were not uncommon. At last, though, we would reach the top, the head of the line, ready for the big moment, our death-defying ride down the water slide, which turned out to go so fast, it was almost over before it began. All that time, waiting for something that was over in the blink of an eye. Or another example. As slowly as time can move for little children waiting for their birthday or Christmas morning to arrive, it all goes by in a blur, gone in a flash, at least at my house. Or one more example. For all the months, well over half a year, that Barb and I spent planning and anticipating our first time ever trip to Ireland, the trip itself flew by and was gone before we knew what happened, with only our memories and our photographs to prove that we were ever there. For 6 weeks, you and I have wandered our way through Lent with Jesus, sojourning with him as he squared off with the tempter in the desert, climbed the Mount of Transfiguration with Peter, James, and John, met secretly with Nicodemus, chatted with a Samaritan divorcee, spread mud on a blind man's eyes, restoring his sight, and summoned dead Lazarus out of the tomb, back into the land of the living. Truthfully, it was a trip that could have gone on forever. One blessed miracle and act of charity after another. Whether we knew it or not, however, Jesus' trip always pointed toward this day and destination. When we, you and I, joined the ancient Jews in parading our palm branches, acclaiming his powerful words and deeds, and anticipating his ushering in an era of peace and prosperity by ridding Israel of all its enemies. The only problem, of course, is that we and they misunderstand him completely. And so a week that begins with such great promise and hope rapidly fizzles out as each passing day brings only more talk by him and precious little action, even as the ruling authorities close in on him. Until at last he declares that his kingdom is not of this world, and he orders his henchmen to put down their swords. So much hope. So much potential. And yet in the end, so little results. Is it any wonder then that Judas tried to force Jesus' hand? Or that the crowd turned against him, cheering instead for Barabbas, a true man of action? or that finally he was left to die all alone, sharing the fate of a common thief when he had stolen nothing really, except for their hearts and their dreams. Did his followers then and now bet on the wrong horse? And so have every reason and right to be bitter, angry, disappointed? Or is there something more going on here that just doesn't meet the eye? Like a fast-moving storm or a fast-moving cancer, the bright cheeriness of this day is quickly erased by a growing sense of darkness and doom. Powerful people, religious people, conspire and plot against Jesus. Judas takes a bribe and looks for the chance to betray him and turn him over. Jesus casts a pall over the annual Passover feast by announcing that this will be his final earthly meal. Jesus is seized, arrested, taken into custody, while his disciples, to a man, desert him, slipping away into the darkness and denying that they ever even knew him. Under cover of darkness, Jesus is interrogated, spat on, and beaten. Then the very next day, paraded through the city streets and jeered as a condemned criminal, the very same streets he walked on and was cheered just 5 days before. And when at high noon he's strung up, nailed to the cross, left to die, clouds cover the sun, as if to mock the one who had proclaimed himself the light of the world. Where did it all go wrong? How did it all turn out so badly? If the events of this week are truly the end, if Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem is just a fool's errand, if Jesus' one shining moment simply becomes part of history's rubbish heap, swept aside and forgotten, then there really is no story here. This is simply the way it is. The way the world operates. People are abused, mistreated, laughed at, humiliated, tortured, killed every single day. Every single day. Whether we're talking about victims of sexual abuse, domestic violence, political oppression, religious persecution, street crime, global terrorism, or any other number of ways we invent to get our way, regardless of the cost, regardless of the harm it causes others and does to our own soul, then Jesus' story is simply one among many. But there's a new week coming. You and I may not be able to see it from here, but there's a new week coming. A week rooted in the very suffering and dying that seem so incomprehensible and yet so unavoidable. Not the suffering and death of helpless and innocent victims that we see every day, but the sacrificial suffering and death of the Beloved, the Holy One, on behalf of all of us. The sacrificial suffering and death of Jesus, rooted precisely in his willingness to step away from and beyond the power-hungry, violence-prone, death-dealing, fear-based, threat-riddled scheming of the world. He understood and wants us to understand that meeting violence with violence, fear with fear, terror with terror, threats with threats, power with power, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth cannot save us or the world. The only thing that can save us is following his lead by stepping away from all of that and daring to place our entire trust in God alone, God's love, God's grace, God's mercy, God's forgiveness, no matter what comes. And so Jesus collapses in prayer, pleading, "Abba, if it is possible, let this cup pass me by, but not what I want, only what you want." So Jesus accepts Judas's embrace, then looks him in the eye and says to him softly, "Friend, friend, do what you have to do." So Jesus stands mute before the high priest, and again before the governor, refusing to dignify their accusations and their charade with answers. So Jesus goes off to die, nailed to the cross, not just one more victim of a cruel and heartless system, but as one who is determined to break that system in two for the sake of all of us. This side of Good Friday, it's awfully hard to fathom. But a new week is coming. A new week is coming.